So what I was thinking is that on Teacup Demagogues, we love talking about things that are for the girls, like slumber parties and coquette bows and, you know, music made by women. But today, instead, we're going to ask, what about the men? Won't someone think of the men? And that's why you're here, Joe. You're a man.
Yes.
You're literally yes. the only man I know.
Yeah, I know.
You're also the first teacup turned demagogue.
Yes, I am. Long time teacup, first time demagogue. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm so glad. So, Joe, I've asked you here today because you are a man and because presumably you speak for all men. And we're going to be talking about men today and what music they listen to and how they listen to music. And, you know, lots of useless generalizations. But first, I think we need to address the elephant in the room. For the teacups at home, I'm sure they're already weeping, having realized that Sally is absent today. And I'm really sorry about that. But in the spirit of this episode that is for the men, she did send a special message from her highly neglected son, Manny, that I'd like to play before
Please
we
do.
Get into it. Okay. Here we go.
What's up? My name's Manny. I'm 15 years old. I'm a freshman at Yale, Harvard. Everything I know about music, I learned from my mom, Moody Bins, but I did not have a good childhood. Women with opinions make bad mothers, and this is every music opinion I ever learned from my mom, but through me, a teenage boy. All right, let's get it. We don't need any new drum and bass because nobody is doing anything interesting with it or improving it at all. Every album The Weeknd made before Starboy will turn your genitals into jerky if you listen to it too many times. R. Kelly said, cutting up tomatoes, fruits, vegetables, and potatoes in 1998, and that was all we needed to know. If you're an emo rapper that made it to legal drinking age, never mind. No band has ever been inspired by Tool. The best soundtrack is Liquid Sky. Descendants are better than Black Flag. Wipers are better than Descendants. If you don't love Nervous Breakdown by Black Flag, you can't sit with us. Red Hot Chili Peppers is better than Minutemen. Fugazi is just Red Hot Chili Peppers for fancy boys. Dead Moon sounds exactly like your friend's band that you don't listen to. Dwight Yoakam is that girl. Harry Styles is fake. Garth Brooks is actually Chris Gaines. Celine Dion is mommy, besides my actual mommy. Girls just want to have fun.
Thank you, Manny, and thank you, Sally, for allowing your very precocious and very real minor child to appear on this program.
I'm excited to be on a podcast in 2024, which might be debating about the Garth Brooks, Chris Gaines dichotomy as well.
I mean, she raised him well, and I'm really
apparently
glad.
Not.
I mean, well, he's very, very neglected. Yeah. But listen, he's 15 and he's going to Yale or Harvard.
Oh, I thought that was one school. I thought that was Yale, Harvard.
It's fine. You don't live in America. Anyway, I am glad that Manny graced us with his presence and his opinions today because it gets at my very first question. Joe, what is a male manipulator and are you one?
Thanks. I mean, you haven't introduced me yet, so...
I'm not going to introduce you.
No, I don't.
How would you like me to introduce you?
I don't know, the usual sort of bugle fanfare, I think.
Okay, I'll insert bugle fanfare. What superlatives / descriptors would you like me to use?
Bon viveur, Renaissance man.
Man about town.
Man about town. Yeah. Friend okay. to all. Yeah.
Joe Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Let's do this. Please welcome to the podcast, for the first time in recorded history, the shockingly notorious music critic and bon vivour, raconteur, Renaissance man, and man about town, the one, the only, Joe Rivers. Okay, Joe. Now that you've been introduced and we can get on with serious matters, please finally tell the kids at home about male manipulators.
I suppose if someone was going to go on a podcast representing all the men, they probably should be asked some tough questions. So in relation to music, which is probably where we should go with this, rather than just my, you know, personal predilections, I think the music side of things is when mostly men try to tell mostly women that certain music is more worthy and important and better, but not just in an opinionated way, but just in a, this is empirically better than something else. And I mean, you see it every day in the kind of backlash against artists like Taylor Swift, because, you know, Taylor Swift's just a girl and she just writes songs about her ex-boyfriends and she's so bitter and all this kind of stuff. In my teens, early 20s, when I first started getting into music sort of really seriously, the kind of investigating things that weren't just on the radio, there was a completist element to it, a competitive element to it, a treating it like sports element to it, I think.
But who are you competing with?
All the other men. And I've clearly won because I'm the one who has been elected to represent them here today.
But were there specific artists that were deemed better?
I think anyone who wrote their own songs and played their own instruments is generally the kind of...
Men in bands.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a time when like my music taste was kind of exclusively skinny, pale boys with guitars.
That's not your music taste now.
No. So I think I don't want to speak for you because, you know...
Oh, please speak for me. I want to see where this goes.
But, caveat, yeah. Asterisk. Uh-huh. I am going to assume that you have been on the end of some many, perhaps, men saying, you need to listen to this artist. You should know this artist.
Oh, but you and I have talked about this.
Yes, exactly.
And I've talked about this on earlier Teacup episodes, I think. But anyway, we've talked about Jeff Buckley because you're the one who finally got me to listen to him.
Yeah, but I had to devise an entire podcast episode to do it, and rather than just be like,
but it worked. Hey,
you should listen to this. Yeah, but
so do we think Jeff Buckley is a male manipulator? That's a separate question. I'm actually gonna say no, for vague reasons that I can't define. But I do think male manipulators listen to him, but yes. I don't think he's male manipulator music. I think we need to like lay out some key male manipulator bands, starting with Radiohead.
Okay, Radiohead, yep.
Tom York, actually, I think, is male manipulator MVP. Mm-hmm. And I'm super, super annoyed that I like The Smile so much, including the new album. It's really good. The Smile album's really good. Oh, you don't like it.
It's okay.
You don't like it. It's okay.
IMO. I do really like those older Radiohead records that are the ones that everyone talks about when we're saying about this kind of thing, you know, like The Bends and OK Computer and Kid A. I think they're all great records. But it's also like a red flag if people start talking about them.
It is. I know. It's a red flag when people like a lot of the stuff I like.
So what does that tell you about you?
Oh, I'm unassailable.
Okay, it's good self-reflection. Well done.
I'm unassailable. My music taste is impeccable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's like I've been listening to a lot of music lately that I've categorized as male manipulator music because it's stuff I've been gatekept out of by very serious men in the past.
Okay. Such as?
Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like Gang of Four and The Fall and Wire and Suicide and Noi and like... I don't know, probably now we're going to get into stuff that I haven't been listening to, but I think is like what the internet has decided is male manipulator music, like Tame Impala.
Oh, did you know that's just one guy?
It's just exactly like anything you can give a little factoid about.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Like yeah. Pitchfork jerks off to the following music. Or used to. Yeah. R.I.P. pour a little out for Pitchfork, I guess, if you like.
But all the stuff you were mentioning before, like Wire and Gang of Four and anything you can describe as angular.
Oh god. Wait, is post-punk just male manipulator music? I don't know, but it's serious. It's serious. Mm. It's the opposite of guilty pleasure music.
It's the opposite of fun.
Well, you know what? No, fine. You're right though. You can dance to it, but you can't like It's not for the girls.
It's not escapism music.
It's not escapism. It's deal with life music. Mm. It's confront the harsh realities of life music.
Yeah. And who wants to do that?
Men. For some reason.
The harsh realities of life where we don't carry any emotional load. So you've been gatekept from stuff in the past, obviously. And I do have like one experience, which is a little like that, perhaps.
Where you did the gatekeeping?
No, where I was. So in my sort of early to mid-20s, I was very active on a music magazine message board to the point where I used to have real life meetups with people who...
I know.
But this music magazine was kind of targeted towards people who were a bit older than me generally. Okay. So I would go to these meetups in pubs in London, and I would always be the youngest person there, not by like a crazy amount, but I was always the, you know, the average age was probably like late 40s or something, and I would have been 24 25.
So a bunch of Gen Xers.
Yeah, I think because I was the right age to be their son, basically. their son, who was probably, you know, their real sons were probably incredibly fed up of like their dad trying to voice music upon them, that occasionally like they would just hand me like CDs, and it's like, oh no, you have you heard of this band? No, you need to listen to this. You really should know this, or this kind of stuff. You know, if you're into music, you know, you think you're into music, but you need to know this. And it was just all the most dull. It was like Ry Cooder and Little Feet, but it wasn't even like, here's their well-known album. It was like, oh, he'll actually this bootleg from, I don't know, the fucking Montreux Jazz Festival or something is really, this is the definitive version of this B-side.
But this is actually bringing me to another, like, how I think men listen to music versus, well, let's be serious, like how straight white men listen to music, right, is by collecting it and fetishizing the niche rather than, I think, like, people are going to get really mad at me, I don't really care. Fetishizing the niche and the collection of it, I think sometimes more than actually enjoying the music itself, because if that were the, just having it, because I have a feel, and this is so not universally true, obviously, because there are, I do actually know men, you guys, I do. there are so many that, like, it's so fun to talk music with them and they aren't gatekeepy, but the ones that, like, if you enjoy music, you're not going
to
gatekeep it, because then what you care about is the actual enjoyment of the music. And to enjoy music, you don't have to know the rare, you know, B-side cut that nobody's ever heard of. And like, yeah, then it doesn't matter. Then it's just like, oh my God, you haven't heard us? That's awesome. Now you get to hear it. And like, it doesn't matter.
And this is part of why your TikTok channel and Sally's TikTok channel and this podcast are so great, because it's just sharing the excitement of like new stuff. And it's not new as in like, actually this is super new, it's not even out yet. It's new just like, hey, here's a thing that you may not have heard, and I hope you like it, and you
keep
might get to turn someone on to it.
Yeah,
and I want to be invited back. So I think really this should be a three-person podcast.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And you can have like, you know, the men's perspective. You can wheel me out for like 10 minutes every time to say like, but what do
you
think?
Okay, well,
we'll
consider it a man segment for the show. But anyhow, the idea that being serious about music for some reason is something that only men can do has been something that I've been thinking about a lot lately.
Well, do you own any box sets or anything like that?
I used to, back when I owned CDs, and I think the only box set I owned was the Beatles, which is like embarrassing in itself, right? Like, isn't that considered, well, not a guilty pleasure, but like, that's the obvious thing to have.
That's your entry level text, right?
Exactly.
What really, I don't know, what's the point in a time when, you know, music's so democratized in as much that you can access any one song as easily as any other generally.
Yeah.
To have this kind of, I mean, okay, like owning objects that look nice can be nice, obviously. But if you're owning it to have it as a thing, that's different to like saying, I want to pay $100 because this is because of the quality of the music.
That's the other thing. Like I don't really talk about the fact that I don't really own a lot of physical media because I think that people will see me as less credible as a music critic because of it. And I don't participate in those discussions because I don't really own that much vinyl. Like, I'm not a vinyl collector. I got rid of my CDs decades ago, or like 15 years ago, something like that. And I wasn't really a CD. Well, who cares about CDs, right? And I don't do like the kitschy like cassette collecting. Like, I just don't have physical media. It is for me a money suck. And that's about it. Like, I already have too much clutter, and that's all it would be, because I have access to everything on Spotify, streaming services.
Exactly. I remember when the iPod first came out, and I just remember being so excited about the fact, like, oh my God, you can like carry all this music with you. Like, you've got access to all this stuff. And just the choice element of it and the kind of breadth of it was the exciting thing. It's like, I like music. Why wouldn't I want to have access to as much of it as possible? And that was always the most important thing.
Right. And like the quote unquote, like cool, serious thing is to be a collector. Like, that's what matters.
But when you say that's what matters to a certain type of person.
That's what matters to men. Well, but like, here's the real reason that I wanted to talk to you about this.
Because I'm the only man you know.
One, because you're literally the only man I know. Mm-hmm. Two, because, you know, I asked you about male manipulators, but you don't actually, okay, so maybe you listened to like, quote unquote, the right music when you were a teenager. But the stuff you listen to now, for the most part, is what I would consider like stuff for the girls, right? Like, what are your favorite music genres? I will not speak over you. I will speak over you, but you get to say.
I listen to a lot of soul, neo-soul, R&B, pop music, dance pop, hyper-pop. All this kind of stuff.
Fun stuff.
And I think that's, I don't know, it comes down to what do you think music is for, quote unquote. And you were saying like bands like Wire and Gang of Four are about confronting the harsh realities of life. And the music I like is more about escapism, I guess. And when we're talking about like male manipulator stuff and people who take music, you know, very seriously, and it has to be played on real instruments in the right way, I feel like that's missing the important part of music to me, which is how does it make you feel? And that is what music criticism in general lacks, because it's the most difficult thing to write about, because it's a personal feeling, because it's not always something that can be put into words. It can be just a kind of rush of endorphins, or like a sort of or it's an association with something as well, right? Like, we're going back to Taylor Swift. She's, you know, part of this ridiculously huge record-breaking tour, and she's playing to like 80,000 people or so every night, and the feedback seems to be there's this incredible like communal spirit there, and to the point that people are going to cinemas to watch it just to kind of be part of this experience. And anyway, it's fun.
It's fun.
Music is for dancing too, and that kind of stuff gets written off as being insignificant sometimes and not important or worthy. But you've got something like disco, which is incredibly fun and incredibly great for dancing to, but that's also music of rebellion and empowerment and marginalized communities.
But also, disco is considered still by a lot of people like deeply unserious and unimportant. Like, you know, obviously the history of disco and how it was like pilloried as this like frankly deeply stupid genre of music that died. Like there was,
well, yeah, that whole disco sucks.
Like the disco demolition. Like...
That's what I was going to say. That's we're both too young for that, but that's yes, a kind of sure. like, was it an early 80s baseball game where they were yep. like, bring all your disco records, we'll set right. them on fire. And also it's like 10 cents for a beer or something like that. And it right. basically turned into a riot.
Right. And like punk kind of took over and then we had like, I don't know, it's just been kind of this laughing stock. I mean, there's obviously more of a revival and recently, and I think that that's not like the prevailing thought anymore, but still I think, you know, maybe it's not a laughing stock anymore, but it's unserious.
But it's also, that kind of attitude is also rooted in homophobia and racism, right, as well,
because yes, exactly.
disco is not for straight white men. It's, you know, there's...
But that's exactly what I've been getting at this whole time. Like anything that's not for straight white men is not serious music. And so wait, this is kind of what I was trying to get at. Like, when is it that you kind of, and I don't know that you made a switch or just added to your tastes, but when is it that you started listening to soul and R&B and pop in addition to or instead of, and you didn't say this, but I happen to know that you listened to like nu metal and stuff like that. I don't think any of us are claiming, you know, least of all you are claiming that nu metal is serious music. And I think of all the male coded genres, if anything can be called a guilty pleasure genre, that one.
But that's also like one of the most like testosterone fueled.
Sure.
Kind of. Yeah, that's just a blip on the musical landscape, right? So I think, yeah, there wasn't a sea change. It wasn't like I, you know, heard one Maxwell record and I was like, oh my God, I renounce everything that's gone before. So a couple of things. One, that is actually a lot of the music I heard growing up. So my parents do, like, I mean, they're not exclusively into that kind of thing. I mean, and when they decide to drink too much and put live music on, it's normally like Hall & Oates or Toto. But,
right.
you know, I did hear a lot of soul and rare groove and stuff like that growing up.
Yeah.
And then obviously you become a teenager and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to base my personality on everything my parents aren't. So I think I kind of... that was
took a pause.
Yeah, inherently kind of a reaction against that subconsciously. But then I think it sounds odd to say this in relation to what we're talking about the music I like being not as serious music, but I just kind of feel like I sort of grew up a bit and I was like, okay, well, sure. I'm gonna like what I like, and I don't really care too much about notions of cool, which again, I mean, technically I am a music critic, right. so, and I've written lots of reviews, so I am sort of telling people what I think is good and not good, and I do read music reviews, so I'm interested in people's opinions about things, and it's interesting to see what the consensus is on certain records and things, but I try not to base my opinion too much on that.
I mean, I guess I'm sort of wondering, and I'm, you know, always thinking about my own experiences because I'm a solipsist, but like how the perception around genres acceptability molded your actual tastes, or like how what you told other people about your tastes and how you approach or discuss music. Like I also, well, I didn't and continue not to really love modern R&B. I do like more like 60s R&B, but I do love soul and disco and girl groups and all that stuff. But for me, that was always relegated to more of a curiosity when I was younger, and I didn't talk about liking it very much because it was also very like considered, at least in my mind, very unserious. And part of that is because I didn't understand, like until I got into the Beatles, actually, because that was, I know, it's basic, but that was really like an inroad for me understanding a lot about rock music and like how everything fit together. Until that, I didn't understand that actually girl groups especially shaped a lot of rock and roll as we know it. But it felt very unserious to me.
Well, because it's sorry, I'm now going to talk over you and explain something. Oh God, this is so fraught. This is I can't
let it be fraught. Just lean in.
I believe you're also using lean in. That's like a Sheryl Sandberg phrase, isn't it? No, I think
I wasn't thinking about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the music that we're talking, like girl groups and soul and things, generally is regarded in terms of individual songs and and rock music is about albums, and albums are longer and they have through lines, and therefore they are more important and worthwhile and all this kind of stuff. So if you read lists of here are the best albums of all time, like, you know, these are the top 10 records that have ever been created. It's the Beatles, it's Pink Floyd, it's Radiohead. Oh shit, it's all white men. It's also, oh God, we like What's Going On, don't we? Chuck that in there. Great, done.
Right.
Job done.
Right.
Yeah, and
yeah, for the DEI.
Well, yeah, and what's going on as well is quite an interesting example, because it was that's kind of the record that took Marvin Gaye and I suppose Motown into like, oh okay, this is actually we're going to look at this music in a different way now, because this is an album that has themes and motifs and this kind of thing. And, you know, as if like...
as opposed to just like single after single.
Yeah, just like banger after banger. Just like, oh, well, yeah, you know, I heard it through the grapevine's fine, but like, why is there no 40-minute version? Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I just... it's interesting to me to think about this stuff, because I wonder if it's anything you actively thought about as a dude, because I actually, and you know, and I'm, you know, we joke, but I'm not saying this is like the universal experience for women by any stretch. I'm not saying that like this is something that men aren't like actively enjoying all this stuff, like not at all, but I was actually thinking about this stuff all the time. Like I would, depending on who I was talking to, like it is about, especially when I was much younger, there was a lot of code switching. Like what I liked, what I said I liked was so dependent on who I was around. And I don't think I would have talked about liking soul,
or I guess not soul really. Like I keep using soul as an example, but I need to stop, because I actually think that genre is taken seriously. Like as far as genres that are not dominated by white men, I think soul and maybe blues have some serious prestige. So what I should be focusing on is genres dominated by women. So like pretty much every flavor of pop. So what I mean to say is that I wouldn't have talked about liking pop or disco, because again, it wasn't quote unquote serious music. And serious music is white man music. And why is that? It can't be fun. And if I had had more vocabulary to contextualize it, and if I had been in my music, like it was years until I still don't consider myself a music critic, but if I had been in that mode, I could have explained why those things are worthwhile and kind of held my own when I got shit for it. But the only times I really would hear about straight white men liking stuff like 60s girls, girl groups is also in that collector mode. Like I have this rare like 45 and, you know, I'm thinking about something like, did you ever see Ghost World?
Oh, years ago. That's Thora Birch, isn't it?
And Scarlett Johansson. That was a really pivotal movie for me, actually. And it has an incredible soundtrack. There's so much talk of like excellent records, and it's all about like collecting records and I should rewatch it, because I don't know how I would look at it now with my 40-year-old eyes and like life experience. Because at the time, I just thought it was so cool, and it really shaped my approach to music. Because I thought that sort of nicheifying, kitschifying, like collecting of music was so aspirational. But at the same time, like Steve Buscemi's character in that movie, there was nothing about his character, who was a record collector, that felt like he wasn't adoring every moment of the music that he was curating and talking about. So those things are hopefully in line with each other.
Yeah.
It's just that I do not get that impression from a lot of people who are collecting records. Like you and I have been talking about this a little bit in the past few weeks about people who collect vinyl but don't listen to it. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of that.
Yeah. And I get that in a way that, you know, record covers are often very, very nice. They're like striking.
Sure. Or the records themselves.
Yeah. I mean, they're literal artwork. You talking about Ghost World and how that kind of shaped things and how Steve Buscemi's character was very enthusiastic about the records he collected makes me think of the film that kind of probably shaped me around a sort of similar impressionable age, which would have been High Fidelity.
Oh, God, of course. But that's that's douchey, though.
Well, there is a central message to High Fidelity, which I missed completely the first few times I read the book and watched the film, because the central message or like the moral of the story actually isn't kind of handled that well, in that it's, you know, that it's, I think the message is supposed to be like, you know, it's about people and emotions and intangibles, and the main character can only process that through making lists and things. But when I first read and watched it, it was just like, oh, here's this aspirational thing, here are these guys, and all they just do is just sit around like making lists about like great records and listening to records, and they're always trying to outdo each other. And there's like there's a scene where Jack Black's character is talking about a mixtape he's made and says a song, and one of the other characters goes, oh, is it this artist's version or this artist's version?
Sure.
And Jack Black says like, oh, it's, and he names the one that's like the household name rather than the obscure name, and the other guy's like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's fine. And they have this big argument about like, what's wrong with that? It's like, oh, no, nothing, I just, you know, I just happen to like
it. Sounds serious.
And there is early on, because the main character's talking about all his breakups, which in his mind, none of which are his fault, even though he's clearly an awful person. Like, he effectively pretty much like assaults one of his ex-girlfriends, and he's like, oh, why did she stop returning my calls?
Yeah.
But he, there's a line that he says quite early on, which is, oh, I decided years ago, it's not what you're like, it's what you like.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Like the worst takeaway for...
Yeah. And I think the idea of the book or the film is to basically show that that's bullshit, and sticking to that attitude means that he ends up being unhappy and lonely and stuck in this dead end thing. But I sort of just took that on and was like, oh my God, that's true.
That's it.
I'll stop reading now. Close this book. So
yeah.
You do. And also as a teenager as well, you kind of do define yourself more by what you're into and that kind of thing. I would like to think I grew out of that, but a lot of people don't. And you talking about girl groups and the fact that that ends up being like a collector's thing, and even also when people talk about girl groups, it's almost like mandatory to just go, oh yeah, but Phil Spector, I mean, what a genius.
God,
you know,
God, God.
you can't just be like, I like the Ronettes, I like the Shangri-Las, it, you know,
it's the men.
there was a Svengali behind. But I was going to talk about Northern Soul.
Oh yes,
because I love Northern Soul.
I hate to admit this, but I love Northern Soul because of you.
Because of the records that I released in the early 70s.
Because of the records you personally released.
Because of my seminal debut album.
Yes. So yeah. Talented.
I know. Ahead of my time. literally as I wasn't born. But
yeah.
And it's music which is incredible for dancing to, which generally, as we've established, is not serious music, isn't for dancing to. But this is music which is great for dancing to. And there is like an interesting origin story, I guess, in that it's music that was sort of not hits, that was brought over from America to the north of England and became huge in these clubs, and this whole subculture grew up around it. And like, you know, it started out as this really uniting force, and even I don't know how gatekeepy it would or wouldn't have been to begin with, but any kind of thing you read about it, it very quickly does become this sort of exclusivity thing where, well, actually, the important thing is to find the rare record that no one else has heard before. And while it is all about dancing and expression, you have to dance a certain way. And And because it was finite, right, it was like the all the music as part of the scene had kind of been made before the scene birthed. So yeah, that's quite an unusual set of circumstances. So there is a finite amount of records, basically, which means that now it is, yeah, it's about collecting.
So it's not about enjoying
the actual music. So it's seven-inch singles that go for five figures on Discogs. It's,
wow,
you know, and this kind of stuff. And years ago, one of my cousins said that he went to a Northern Soul night where he lives in Sheffield, and it was him and his wife went, and they're like, we like this music and we like dancing, let's just go. Sure. And they were the youngest people there by quite a long shot, but yeah, they were kind of told, you know, oh well, no, you can't dance in this part of the floor because this is where like the really serious dancers go. And one point his wife put her handbag down. It's like, oh no, if you put your handbag down there, that means you want someone to dance with you or something like that. And there were just all these, it had just been codified rules. There were just all these rules, and they're like, this is bullshit, we just like these records and we wanted to, you know,
yeah, too bad.
go and have a dance on a Saturday night. And you know, it's escapism. Like, it's,
yeah, this is what happens.
Mm.
Well, I really love that genre also because you introduced me to it, and I didn't realize that there were all those rules to enjoying it. But you know, now that I know, I'll be very careful.
Yeah, if you, next time you listen to one of those records, if you could tell me in advance, and I will tell you how to listen
all the rules.
To it.
Mm,
yeah.
Yeah, you should have done that right away.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, as far as all the lists and collecting and high fidelity stuff, that made me think of the reason that Sally and I know each other in the first place, which is, there's this dude on TikTok. I honestly, maybe he's like a serious person, like maybe he's like a critic, I don't fucking know. I can't do an episode about men without talking about him, so I figured we'd give him his due. But I don't care enough to like actually look into him beyond you know.
But this is yours and Sally's like villain origin story, isn't it?
It is exactly our villain origin story. So this guy, Derek G, who made a video like a year ago saying, why aren't there more women in music criticism? And he said, you know, because men like to categorize things and list things and put things on shelves. But women, they're good at quantifying the intangible.
Mm, yeah, I remember that.
Whatever it is he said.
Yeah, he said there was one of the problems with music criticism is there wasn't enough discussion of the decorative. I think that was the word.
Oh, the decorative. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that entirely. Mm,
and
yes, yeah.
Like that was almost a parody of like someone, presumably with good intentions.
Presumably. That's like,
Yeah, but then just getting it so wrong that it made things worse, because it's like, okay, well, why aren't there more women in music criticism? Okay, that's a good question. That is something to potentially debate. But it was kind of like, there wasn't a sort of, okay, well, let's look at the systemic problems within the industry. It was a kind of, well, it's because men be like this and women be like this. It was...
Right. Well, which I've done plenty of, we have now done plenty of, I think, on this episode. But I just, you know, have to mention that on this man episode, that men be gatekeeping. And I was going to apologize and kind of say like, I talk too much about gatekeeping on this show, but nah.
No.
I'll talk more about it.
Yeah. Well, this is, I mean, the central theme of this podcast is misandry, isn't it?
Is there a central theme to this podcast?
Yeah, it's that.
Is that it? Thank you. Thank you for telling me what the central theme of this podcast. I thought that it was music.
No.
Personally.
Yeah, I can see why you think that, but actually.
It's incorrect. Okay. Thanks.
No problem. At what point does this stop becoming a parody and start becoming slightly too
too real.
Was that the, that's the goal of this episode? You're going to bring me on, debate me, defeat me, and then
defeat,
win.
Yes, it says defeat you.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's it. Defeat you.
Okay.
Have I defeated you? Do you feel defeated?
I mean, what, just generally or?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good, 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 good. Mm, wait, but how much of that is because of me?
Okay, let's quantify. Yeah, we need to quantify things, don't we?
We do. You do. I can
obviously
sit back.
You can sit back.
I can sit back and feel things.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, is this episode 8.4 and 8.3? Oh, this is difficult. This is difficult. Why am I trying to describe this with words when there are perfectly good numbers? Four. Mm-hmm. Four is the answer. Going back to what we've spoken about earlier on, is around how men and women potentially enjoy music in different ways.
Yeah.
Or it is seen that they do. And, you know, men, it's collecting and it's empirical and, you know, and girls just want to have fun.
That's what Manny says.
Exactly. He knows. Why didn't you get him on?
I tried. He wasn't available.
Also, there's child labor laws as well, right? So, and, you know, he's busy at Yale, Harvard. But no, I was going to ask you, the kind of music you've talked about enjoying more recently that you've had kind of gatekept from you, have you been to shows by those artists or similar artists? Because I'm just wondering what the demographics of the audience are like. What's the vibe?
So I don't really go to that many shows these days because I'm old.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't a good excuse, but that is the excuse. The last show I remember going to by a like post-punk band, which is what I equate with this sort of thing, was Dry Cleaning a couple years back. Which, like, you know, is fronted by a woman, but, you know,
yeah, they let one through. Yeah.
They let one through. I don't remember it being not vibey.
Okay.
I loved it. I thought it was super fun. I like basement shows, though. Like, I like that sort of thing.
Mm.
But there's also a cachet to that. Like, there is something, I will always have it in my head that there is something cooler about basement shows than a big pop stadium show. And is that also like misogyny? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, maybe. I don't know, right? Because it's not related to necessarily the artist who's playing them, but like is it not the communal experience, but also coupled with the intimacy? Like, I feel like if you go to a stadium show, you're so far away from the artist in question that it's like,
But I can't think of
as much.
Like, how often can you see a pop dancey show
that is in
like a really small environment? Like, real pop music is often big in some way. I have seen, like, I don't know, I'm thinking like I've seen like Girl Talk in a really small venue, or like The Blow. This is so aging me. Whatever. But I can't think of like indie pop in super, super small venues, and that's great. And I'm sure there's some equivalent now, and I'm just not thinking about it.
So in the last couple of years, in small-ish venues, but I'm talking like still 2,000 people, I've seen Confidence Man and Carly Rae Jepsen as well.
In a small venue you saw Carly Rae Jepsen?
Yeah, I think about a 2,000 or 3,000 person venue, I think.
Okay.
And certainly nothing that was like anywhere near like stadium size. And because of that, you can obviously just get much closer. But the kind of, I think with that kind of music, a lot of the issues comes from the, you know, it's ephemeral, it's throwaway, it's fluff, it's not important. But then you go to those kind of shows and it's like, well, you know, try telling the people at these shows that this stuff isn't important, right? Like, it's, you know, it's not serious in the way that Radiohead, and like, we're shitting on Radiohead a bit here, and we both like
That's
Radiohead
fine.
So
I
know
Radiohead.
They're just just kind of they're sort of a signifier
default
at the moment.
Serious band.
It's not necessarily their fault, but then you go to a Carly Rae Jepsen show and the people who are there are just as dedicated to that, and it's just as important to them as something to do with Radiohead is, and perhaps even more so, right? Because it's a lot of the people at that show are from marginalized communities. So having a space to come together is more important. Like,
it's more enjoyable.
Yeah. And I just prefer those kind of shows as well, just because there's so much more of a celebratory atmosphere as well. Like it just feels more uplifting, it feels safer, it's
for the girls.
Oh, is that what it is? But they let me in and I have a beard and everything. Okay. Did you ring ahead? Is that why they let me in?
I did. Yeah. I said, this is the one man I know, and he's okay.
I'll vouch for him. If he goes up on stage and starts unplugging amps, let me know. But
and never let him in again.
Yeah.
Yeah, but otherwise, it's fine.
Obviously, every single song that comes on, I have to go and find someone and tell them who the actual songwriter was.
Oh, my God. All right. It's we're done.
Yeah.
All right. So what have we actually learned today? Nothing.
Are we supposed to learn something?
No. But I thought maybe we would today.
Okay.
Because we brought a man on and maybe we'd learn something from the man.
Ooh, okay.
I learned nothing.
Yeah.
I try not to learn anything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for nerds. Learning is for nerds.
Mm. Yeah. So I guess I've accomplished that. But I thought maybe we would discuss something that was useful. And we didn't. And that's cool.
Wow, your PR is great.
My PR is great.
You should work in advertising.
And this episode that was for men was for the girls as well, I think.
Well, then I failed, haven't I? Because my intention was to kind of come in as a double agent.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did a terrible job of that. But I'm really glad that you came on.
I'm glad that I came on as well. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm sorry I didn't properly introduce you. But if people do want to know who you are, where can they find you?
Oh, I don't know. If people want to find me, my parents' home phone number is +44. Just email teacupdemagogues@gmail.com.
We're not forwarding any mail.
Forward me, please, my mail.
If people want to find Joe, he co-hosts Quarantine the Past with me and two other dudes who write for No Ripcord.
Yes, No Ripcord.
Which is a music review magazine that nobody reads. Joe also writes for some other music magazines.
I write for Clash magazine. I write for kind of entertainment magazines in Sydney, Australia, which is where I live. So yeah, I write for, if anyone is familiar with Australian entertainment magazines, I write for Concrete Playground and The Urban List and Broadsheet as well. But I'm quite easy to find on these things.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for joining me to talk about men.
Thank you for having me. It's my favorite topic. It's not true. Myself is my favorite topic, but
yeah.
Music is second. So thank you.
Wait, is that the end?
That's the end, Sally. It's time to say goodbye.
Oh, but Gabby, I'm bad at goodbyes.
That's not true. Besides, we'll be back.
When?
I don't know. Eventually, like in 2 weeks.
What if the teacups need to talk to us?
Then they can write to us at teacupdemagogues@gmail.com.
Or we could give them your phone number.
Nope.
666-420-69.
I live my life online. I don't have one any other time. All of these friends are mine. You've got friends.